How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan, Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room, Ben Rosales of Silver Screen & Roll, and Darius Soriano of 4&Blue & Gold and Laker Film Room, the podcast there. The Lakers wrapped up
with... Here's Tommy, man. Are you just going
to... Well, is Tommy hooked up to a microphone? He's here. We should be acknowledged.
Nobody.
Tommy, say something if you care about the introduction.
Thank you, Harrison.
I hope we edited that out. All right, so we are finally through the NBA draft. It just finished up. The Lakers wrapped up. They started the night with two picks. They started the offseason with one pick and D'Angelo Russell. What we're going to do here is talk about the night, not just in and of itself in a vacuum, but also take into account the meetings up to tonight and everything that kind of went on. I'll start with you, Harrison. Starting from the end of the finals to now, are you okay with, happy with, or disappointed with the offseason thus far?
I think if you're evaluating the offseason objectively, it's a little bit of a disappointment. I think most Lakers fans, and myself included, were pretty high on D'Angelo Russell. I thought he was the best prospect on the Lakers roster. He is no longer on the Lakers roster. And so, I don't know. I think you kind of objectively, it hasn't been great. Getting Lonzo Ball in the draft tonight was definitely a big deal, and that's a positive thing for the franchise. I've been told that the prospects that the Lakers selected in the other with their other picks are good. I don't really know them that well, so I can't really speak to that. We have some people here who can hopefully speak to that. But I think overall, it's definitely been below par from what most people thought it would be. Getting out of the Mozgov contract's good. Lopez will help the team next season. They'll help the younger guys. But so there are positives here. I don't want to make it seem like it's all doom and gloom, but using D'Angelo Russell to get out from under Mozgov's contract was not something I expected at all.
Darius, the four of us, honestly, technically the five of us, have spoken to each other literally for the last 5 hours or so, so I'd like to hear a different voice here. But do you think the Lakers addressed enough of their issues moving forward? Because, like, personally, I'm a little nervous about almost the majority of the guard rotation with the Lakers moving forward being in their first year, and I can't get past that concern.
Yeah, they're shallow on the wing. Nick Young opted out today. Was that today or yesterday? The days are running together.
So
Nick Young opted out. The Lakers drafted Josh Hart, who's a shooting guard. They have Lonzo Ball now, who's going to play point guard. They have Dave Nwaba, and they've got Jordan Clarkson. Folks have been saying the name Tyler Ennis, but Ennis is not under contract for next season. And the Lakers are actually limited in what they can pay him due to, like, CBA rules. And so they're going to need to look for a guard in free agency, I think. You know, even if the Lakers were to still be active on the trade market, and there are reports that they're still in discussions with the Pacers. So like a trade, theoretically a trade for Paul George could still happen, and maybe we'll get into that later, but the way it looks now, they're going to need at least one guard, either a shooting guard or a point guard, depending on what they think Jordan Clarkson is.
Yeah, Pete here. They Lonzo and Hart and all them young cats, there's really no room for them to grow into, like, they got to hit the ground running. And, you know, if this Paul George trade can go through, he's really going to be a guy that can help put everybody into more natural spots. But as it stands now, you've got, you know, you've got Lonzo, Clarkson, and Hart. And really, Hart is a, you know, late first-round pick. If he becomes a legitimate rotational player in the NBA, that's a win. That's not what usually happens at that part. So, or at that point of the draft. So, you know, Lonzo's going to be a 19-year-old point guard that's got a big old target on his back, you know, and is
bigger than normal, too.
Bigger than normal, right.
Big, like, baller size.
A big baller size target on his back.
A big bullseye brand.
And it's not going to be given space to kind of go through the growing pains. Like, I think one of the results of the Mozgov salary dump with Russell attached is that all eyes are on Lonzo and Ingram at this point. You know, mm-hmm. We're hoping for Paul George, but yeah, at this point, we need those kids to really come through, and they don't have much time to figure it out.
And the Paul George thing, that's the elephant in the room that we haven't really talked about.
So I think after kind of that, I think that's the best offer that the Lakers are going to put on the table, and I think that Indiana has thus far obviously not been able to find something that much better than that, or maybe they would have taken it, or maybe they were just really left wanting by the other offers. But I thought Kevin Pritchard had a lot of, like, really kind of fiery and interesting comments tonight. He was talking about, I have to get past Mad because we'll make good decisions here. We're methodical. He said about the trade situation, I know it's not ideal, but we didn't put ourselves in this situation. He did. And then he also said, I'm confident we'll get something, which is not how most post-draft press conferences with GMs go, but I think he kind of came out breathing fire at Paul George and at the rest of the league for not giving him better offers for Paul George.
I guess there's that, and I think that he's heated after the fact because he probably feels pretty offended.
It's like his first week is yeah. His new job.
Well, but he was getting offended by deals also coming from people who were also kind of sort of in their first week. Right, so it's one thing when you feel like you're getting taken advantage of. Who was it? Fizdale from Memphis, when he thought he was getting kind of sunned by the referees with the San Antonio Spurs. Yeah, and you know, it's another thing entirely when another rookie is rookieing you. Then, based on the way the draft went, though, is there an offer that you're more comfortable with because of the guys that the Lakers took than you might have been heading into the draft? Or do you think the Lakers or Pacers would have been better served making a deal happen before the draft or anybody used their picks?
Well, let's say right now that it's much, much easier to make a deal happen when the picks are still haven't been made or theoretical.
They're still in the box.
Right, because the picks before they're made are purely potential. I mean, they always look more attractive, they always feel more attractive. In often case, they are more attractive because the other team gets the opportunity to make the picks they wanted on their particular board. As it stands now, from a practical standpoint, it doesn't change much in that Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, and Thomas Bryant are still eminently tradable in that the Lakers only own their rights at the moment. They haven't signed them to contracts, which would complicate the trade scenario. You wouldn't be able to trade them until about August, I believe. So at the moment, I really don't know. I think it's more difficult at this point because the picks have been made. The Lakers have kind of settled on their guys, and Indiana thus has to be okay with the Lakers' guys that they've selected. And also, to the extent that, I mean, the Lakers are about to sign these guys, I mean, for Summer League. There's no more weight 8 and the new CBA for getting that 20% difference between the rookie scale and what the guy ultimately signs for, you automatically get 120% rookie scale. So Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart are right now have a cap hold equivalent to what they're going to be worth ultimately on the cap. So, I mean, I think altogether, unless the Pacers are going to accept a Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, and minor asset offer, I think it's definitely harder now than it was a few hours ago.
Darius, do you think a Paul George trade happens at this point, or do you think the Lakers and the entire league waits for him to hit free agency?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, and honestly, I have zero feel for that. So let's flip the script and look at this from the Pacers side. I have a hard time understanding how they're actually going to bring Paul George to training camp at this point. And I don't know if you guys in the room there agree with me or not. What was that?
I was agreeing with you and saying that the comments tonight from Pritchard were way too fiery. They were Phil Jackson-esque, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I just don't see how you know, this isn't a Kobe in 2008 situation or summer of 2007 where he, you know, made a trade demand and this, that, and the other. You know, Kobe was under contract at that point for a couple of more seasons and he didn't make his intentions like, okay, well, I'm only here for one more year and then that's that. If anything, this sort of reminds me more of the situation the Lakers felt when the veto happened and Lamar Odom, you know, the Lakers at that point felt they couldn't bring Lamar Odom back to the team and they had to execute a trade. And if I'm the Pacers, that's probably where I sit with Paul George. You know, Paul George probably feels like, well, I'm a player. I'm the best player. I'll play wherever I'm going to play. And if that's in Indiana next year, I'm guessing he'd make the best of it. And that would be that. But can you imagine going into that locker room or what the environment would be like for the Pacers knowing that Paul George is going to walk? And forever. And I was listening. I can't recall who said this today, but I thought it was a great point, is that every game that Paul George plays for the Pacers is one less game he's playing for the team that wants to trade for him, which ultimately lowers his value even more.
There's also something there's something to be said for going through a training camp with the team. There's a reason why we make all of these you know, trade scenarios at the trade deadline of what could happen, but really this time of year is a lot more active because with a guy like Paul George, I mean, obviously he's a great player, but having him come halfway through the season, you have to make alterations to what you're doing, and that's difficult.
Now, especially if you're a playoff team,
right?
Like if you're trying, it's one thing if you're picking him up on a team that's kind of whatever, and you'd like a ticket sales boost, and you're bad, whatever. But if you're a playoff team and he's supposed to help you win games late in the season, you have to get this done by the time the season starts. You absolutely have to.
You want him there day one of training camp.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and also because it changes scheme-wise what you have to do. If you're the what the Lakers would run with Paul George in the hole is very different from what the Lakers would run right now, where it looks like their centerpieces on offense are going to be, I don't know, like Brook Lopez and Lonzo Ball. Julius Randle.
Here's the thing about this. So George has to be traded. Pritchard has to trade George this offseason. The question is do the Lakers have is it better than any of the alternatives of a rental? The biggest fear that I have is like San Antonio came into the fold in terms of being a rumored team that could be interested in him. Like, the idea of Paul George going to San Antonio and then after a year being like, nah, I'm good, and I'm going to go to L.A., like, it's not far-fetched necessarily because he really wants to be here from everything that we understand, but neither is the idea of him falling in love with San Antonio and the culture that they have there and how far they go in the playoffs. you know. So I don't know if like a Brook Lopez is Lopez would move the needle or anything at the trade deadline or anything, but I don't think it really gets to that point in the first place. They've got to move him now, but with teams like San Antonio, Boston getting into the fray, I could easily see him being like, no, I want to stay here. And then what do we do?
Not only to the point of, like, if he gets moved, because if he gets traded before the season, CBA-wise, Ben, if he gets moved before the season starts, is he still eligible for any kind of his bird rights come over and he can make more with the team that picks him up, right?
Yeah, so it's a bird rights question, but he can only get the Supermax if he makes the All-NBA team next year in Indiana.
Yeah,
which he's not.
That's not going to happen.
That ship
I don't think he's even going to try hard enough to in Indiana.
That ship has definitely sailed.
Yeah. But I think, Ben, from and again, we'll move on to some of the other, you know, stuff and the other stuff that went on around the league here in a second. But I don't think it's far-fetched at all to say that the two biggest stories are, one, Lonzo Ball, and two, Paul George, in some order. And regarding Paul George, Ben, do you feel like, you know, as a Laker fan, and do you think Laker fans out there, are you disappointed walking away from the draft without him being in the fold? Because I can't get away from that sense of, like, you make that trade and you dump D'Angelo Russell, and what?
I always worry about treating those types of deals as sunk costs. I think that was the kind of idea that led to the Mozgov trade in the first place. Oh, we needed to purge this guy off the roster, thus we'll give up D'Angelo, whereas they really didn't need to. I think they should have treated it as a sunk cost and moved forward and tried to work around it. And I think it's the same thing here. I mean, we came into this offseason with the very idea that George wants to come, and that's great, but there's a limit to what we're going to give up for him. We're going to play the situation with him like the Knicks should have played the Melo situation. We're not going to give up the farm for him. We're going to sit and sit on the offer that we think is right. And if that's not enough for Indiana, that's okay. He can be traded elsewhere, and we will wait for 2018 free agency. And if that incurs a risk of him falling in love with a Boston or somewhere else, then so be it. Like, Paul George is not the be-all, end-all rebuilding option. This sounded much better when D'Angelo Russell was on the team.
Yep.
So, of course, the Lakers have, to a certain extent, boxed themselves in, but I still think you don't chase after a bad something bad with more bad.
Yeah.
Like you don't
compound a mistake.
Exactly.
I wanted to, really quickly though, I wanted to ask Darius, were you surprised by how little Jimmy Butler fetched? And if that's the case, do you think Boston was kind of taken aback a little bit in terms of what they were willing to offer for Paul George, and did that set the price a little bit?
So, yes and no in terms of being surprised. The yes part, because, you know, just Butler's talent level and how good of a player he is and all of that that goes with, you know, trading a top 10 or 15 player, which I think Butler clearly is. No, from the standpoint of some GMs are dumb.
Garpax qualifies.
You know, like, and so there's this idea too about when free agents get paid on the open market, and that idea that it only takes one, you know. So, you know, people were saying that Andre Iguodala could end up going to the Timberwolves because they could offer him $20 million, and all it takes is one team to sort of drum up your price. Well, it's sort of the inverse when it comes to trades. And I think we saw a little bit of that with D'Angelo Russell, although to me it's becoming more and more clear that the Lakers, even if the Lakers were intent on trading D'Angelo Russell, it was more, you have to take Mozgov too. And I feel like that is what depressed his value. So when that rumor floated about the Lakers had been calling lottery teams or whatever, or even necessarily the Pacers didn't get D'Angelo Russell, I think it's because the structure of any deal surrounding Russell likely involved Mozgov, regardless. And so when it comes to, you know, what Jimmy Butler went for, I just think that teams may not have been willing to either give up what we thought they might want to give up for Jimmy Butler, or the Bulls sort of panicked and said, okay, well, like, we'll get another high lottery pick, and then we'll get last year's number five pick. In theory, these are good assets. It's just that maybe we in this conversation don't value them the same way.
I want to let the record show, on our way over here, we recorded this 5 hour long live podcast here in Tom's house. On our way over here, we stopped at a Food for Less. Was it a Food for Less? So we stopped at a Food for Less, and I picked up like a six pack of 805, and I felt so confident that Lakers were going to land Paul George tonight that I bought a bottle of champagne. And it went from like a celebratory kind of thing to a, okay, Harrison, you can go ahead and rub this in my face kind of thing, because you didn't think that this was going
to
happen.
I tried to tell you it wasn't going to happen tonight. But actually, the point Darius made about it only takes one idiot to kind of mess around
and buy a bottle of champagne.
Or buy a bottle of champagne to celebrate a trade that's not going to happen. But regardless of the bad decision, it only takes one idiot. And I think that does – I don't necessarily want to say that the Lakers are front office are idiots. I don't think they're idiots by any means. But have you guys – the past week, it seems like people were a lot more optimistic about this new front office, especially the people in this room, before this past week in the D'Angelo Russell trade. Pete, I was kind of curious. It seems like you – have maybe sullied a little bit.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, everyone knows I'm a big fan of Russell's, and I think that they gave him talent for a salary dump. It's two things. Right now, with the loss of Russell, Lou Williams a while back, Nick Young, and Mozgov, like, our starting lineup, as it stands today, is, what, Lonzo, JC, Ingram, Randall, and Brooke Lopez. That isn't a better team than we had last year.
No.
We don't have our pick next year.
And they have...
You tried to tweet that, like, you tried to tweet a picture of the Lakers' old starting lineup, and then the upgrade key, and then that one, it would just say error. Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't let you do it.
Right. Like, and the thing is that we didn't even have Paul George in the bag when we did that. So the whole theory, and Palinka had a press conference tonight after the draft saying that... Went out and said, we want two max guys. We cleared out space for two max guys. That was the rationale for the Russell Mozgov trade. Well, who are those guys going to be if Paul George is the most probable, but he's not in the bag.
No.
And then the second guy, so Westbrook's probably going to re-up for the Supermax. Like, that's the most, likely scenario. We're hoping for LeBron. That's the best case scenario.
35-year-old LeBron.
Sure, but that's still the best case scenario because the next guy is, what, DeMarcus Cousins?
Yeah.
So even if everything works out on a pretty good level and we get Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins, how good is that team?
You need the young guys that they have left. Like, you need Lonzo Ball to be a legitimate superstar. You need Brandon Ingram to break out and be a 22-point-per-game scorer.
To be fair, though, to jump in, that was always going to be true.
Yeah.
Well, do you think, though, I think they're putting more pressure on it because of the moves they made than was the case before. Yeah, with Lonzo, I think he could have come into the fold, especially as a point guard. If you have Russell still there, you have a safety valve. Like, that's how it kind of, like a safety blanket.
What it is is that he represents a third guy that could possibly conceivably break out into being even just an all-star caliber player, not necessarily a superstar, but there's only two guys now on the roster amongst the young guys that I could foresee, if everything works out right, they're going to be all-stars, and that's Lonzo and Ingram. As much as I like Zubats, as much as I like Nance, Randall, JC, those guys are not, that's not what their future is. And so they went from 3 to 2 in that respect.
So a couple things that I want to talk about before we wrap this thing up. The first thing I want to talk about is the vibe I got because of the picks they made tonight, there was a lot of crossover, carryover. There was a lot of the guys that they drafted played a lot of the same positions that they currently have. So the first thing that I was thinking was that it was kind of a fresh start moving forward. Second thing was Pelinka's press conference. So we'll wrap on Pelinka's press conference. But Darius, because of the guys that they drafted Josh Hart, who was a shooting guard that they direly needed, right? But they drafted Kuzma, who's a kind of power forward. Yeah, he's a four. They drafted the big guy Martin, who's Thomas Bryant, who's a five, and a lot of their picks occurred there in the front court, and because of that, I kind of wondered if they were trying to extend their window with cheaper solutions than the guys that they currently have in the front court and starting fresh in case they want to open up cap space as much as they possibly can next year. Did you get the same vibe?
Yeah, I tweeted it out that the Kuzma pick especially felt like a hedge against either Randall or Nance. You know, the Lakers are going to have to move. One of those guys is not going to play. Either Randall, Nance, or Kuzma. You know, we haven't even talked about, like, Luol Deng at all. I know there's a good reason for that, but still. So, Deng is on the roster. I think we would all agree that he's optimized most as sort of a stretch power forward at this point. If he returns to the wing next year and is expected to sort of play small forward for the majority of his minutes, that's going to end up playing out poorly. Even he knows it because he said it himself in an interview that he did after the end of the season. And so I don't know how the Lakers are going to carve out minutes and for all of the power forwards that they have on their roster, even if you decide you're going to slide up one of them to play center for a fair amount of time, you still have Lopez there. You still have Zubats there. And so even if, like, let's say Julius Randle plays 10 of his minutes a game at center, and, you know, Brook Lopez gets like 25, last year he played 29 minutes. So let's say that he's at 25 minutes. That still only leaves then, what, 13 minutes a game for the third center. And then you've still only got, you know, whatever minutes remain for Randall at power forward. And then you still have to play Nance. So who's not going to play? That's a question that I have at this point. And that led me to believe that one of these guys is likely going to get traded, which sort of brings me back to Paul George. One last point is that I was listening to a podcast earlier today, and Brian Windhorst made the point that if you're going to trade for Paul George, you might as well include Julius Randle, because in order to open up the type of cap space, and I think this will bridge us nice to whatever Pelinka was saying in his presser, but if you're going to open up enough cap space to sign two free agents, the squeeze there is either Clarkson, who makes $12 million, or Randall, whose cap hold is going to be $12 million. And Brian Windhorst outright said, I don't think the Lakers are going to keep Julius Randle.
Yeah, I think at this point the writing is kind of on the wall. With his extension coming up and all of this, and him being included as a piece equivalent with Clarkson in those George trade talks.
That was crazy to me.
Yeah, I just feel like that means that Randall is most likely on the outs. But the thing that complicates things here is that he has that agent, the same agent as Paul George. And if they're trying to extricate George from Indiana, does Mintz really want to send Randall back there and then have to negotiate an extension with them right away?
Especially playing the same position, really, as Miles Turner. Like, Turner could play the five, I guess.
No, I think Turner and Randall are actually a very good fit in the front court together. They actually complement each other.
Because Turner can space it a little bit.
Yeah. Tiny, though.
No, I mean, you'll have issues with Turner. But I mean, Turner's a subpar rebounder. Randall's a plus rebounder. Turner defends the rim. Randall can scout on the perimeter. So, I mean, they're actually a good fit. I mean, for as much as Indiana has probably been offered in this process. I think they could probably do a lot worse than getting Randall.
I do.
Yeah, think... Turner was actually a guy. Turner was actually a guy the Lakers reportedly liked. The same year that they drafted Russell, and that there were discussions about them trading out of two, and the target was going to be Turner.
I've always liked.
So
I've really liked his game.
I think everybody likes Turner's game.
Yeah.
It's funny. I feel like there's several guys from that draft who are overrated, and he's the one who's underrated.
Yeah.
Like I think he's a better player than Booker is, and
yep.
I know.
Oh yeah.
I'm so outlier opinion on this. I think he's a better player than Porzingis is. Like he's
close.
You know, they're similarly poor rebounders. I think he's a better defender than mm-hmm. Porzingis is. I think he's about the same as a shot creating type of player. So. You know, he could stretch the floor, not quite as well as Porzingis does, but I think just on the defensive end, I think he provides more than Porzingis does. But anyway, he's he's probably the most underrated guy from that draft. That said, it's all, you know, it's all for not.
We're also 2 years in.
Right? Other than D'Angelo Russell, I guess, the most underrated guy.
sadness.
All right, I want to wrap on this point because I found Rob Pelinka's presser incredibly interesting and incredibly telling, more telling than it was interesting, not just from his perspective, but from the perspective of the way it was kind of handled. Darius, did you have a chance to listen to it?
I did not, so fill me in.
All right, so I'll throw it to Harrison then. So Harrison, first off, the first thing that kind of jumps off the page is, once again, he's a great talker. He's really good at talking. He's a politician. He's great at talking without saying anything.
He knows what kind of quotes journalists need. He throws a ton of platitudes out there about these guys, then it's very, very usable. He doesn't necessarily have to say anything of substance. He just has to talk and say nice things about players.
So I thought the most telling moment of the night was when he was asked to describe the D'Angelo Russell trade. And he described it in three parts, right? He said that, one, he got an all-star center, which, okay, sure. And
I hold my eyes so hard.
All-star caliber stretch five.
Expiring contract. Lopez is a good player. And if he was under contract for longer, I'd have a different opinion of his.
But I'm not willing to call him an all-star.
I'm not going to necessarily
say all-star caliber.
Like,
fair,
he was over 20 points per game guy in under 30 minutes. Like, he can score.
Well, I think in today's NBA, you can be a really good player without being an all-star.
Absolutely. But like for me, I don't care really how good of a player Brook Lopez is, because he's not going to be
here on
the next team that has a chance of contending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he also said that
the deal gave them amazing salary cap relief. Not just salary cap relief, amazing salary cap relief.
It did. It did, though.
They could have stretched Mozgov and, like, they saved $6.5 million.
Over the next whatever.
Right. Like, if they stretched Mozgov, that's the difference between making this trade and stretching Mozgov next summer.
Yes.
$6.5 million. That's not amazing.
And it's a deal, though, that, like, again, the issue that a lot of people are missing out on, you can say it's an okay value, fine, but it could have been just as good a value at the trade deadline. It could have been just as high a value, if not more, less a value, or a better value, if you didn't have to attach D'Angelo Russell at such a low selling point as the Lakers currently did. The third point, though, that he mentioned, Harrison, was that it created somehow four draft picks, right? Which, like, yes, technically they got an extra first rounder, which they turned into a second one, and whatever.
They turned the extra first rounder into one extra first rounder, and then a second rounder.
Right. And so Darius, with that analysis, if that all made sense to you, with that analysis as your kind of North Star, I thought it was pure spin, honestly. I thought it was pure BS. And him calling Brook Lopez an all-star caliber center, I thought, was a talking point that he got directly from Jeannie because of the quotes that she gave earlier this year. But with that analysis behind you, where would you say, like, do those quotes make you feel better about the trade, or is it made me more angry about it?
No, so nothing anyone is going to say is going to make me feel necessarily different about the trade. I have a mind of my own. I don't need anyone to spin it or tell me, well, this is the reason. Like, I mean, we know what the reasons are. The reasons are is you wanted to get out of Mozgov's contract. Mozgov makes $16 million a year. D'Angelo Russell makes roughly $6 million a year. Next year it was going to go up. Or, you know, this year I think it was about 6 or 6.2. And then next season it was going to be like 6.5 or something like that. And so Lopez makes $22 million and they just traded $22 million away. When Lopez falls off the books, then that's it. It's over, right? And you can make the argument that stretching Mozgov gets him off of the cap, and it does, but not really, because you still carry a load with that. Now, if you stretch him after next season, then it's a less of a load. There's still an argument to be made, and I've seen plenty of smart people make this argument, that you could trade him, you know, maybe next summer, because it would be easier to trade and it's more palatable. And yeah, like, I would have leaned towards not making this trade, and not just leaned, you know, like Michael Jackson's smooth criminal lean. Like,
you know. Bottom line, in my opinion, I just think bottom line, if they don't build this LeBron, George, Cousins, whatever, super team next summer, this was a bad deal.
Well, but
even then, though, even if they build it, is it enough? Like, is it enough to mortgage your
season? Then it's an acceptable deal.
You have to have LeBron being a cyborg and being pretty much who he is in a year or in a year and a half, like the same guy that he is right now, if possible. And I just can't say strongly enough that Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins is not a super team. Right, that plus two kids that can barely drink, if at all. Like, he's next to Anthony freaking Davis in New Orleans, and they went 11-14 together. They
can figure it out. Only one on the floor.
Right, and with a decent third option in Drew Holiday. They're bad outside of that roster-wise. But Drew Holiday at age 26, 27 is a better player than our puppies are going to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
I think to me, and I think everyone would agree with this, or at least you guys, who I'm going to count as everyone, that the hardest part of this for me to swallow is that if the Lakers were really going to become a championship contender, whether LeBron's here or Paul George is here, DeMarcus Cousins is here, or they find a way to like absorb another star player who makes a crazy trade demand and says he wants to play for the Lakers and whatever, right? Imagine any scenario you want. The way that championship teams are built is that they have at least one, and typically more than one, homegrown, really good player. And not just really good, like, you know, in the top, you know, 15 players in the league. And from where we sit right now, D'Angelo Russell was the best of their young players. And I think that by removing him from the equation, you remove one more option of a player who potentially could have become that. And yes, there are things that we do not know about D'Angelo Russell, things that were going on from behind, like behind the scenes or whatever. And if that wasn't the case, they would not have felt that he was the one that was going to grease the wheels to dump salary. That said, you have now lowered it from, okay, now we have maybe Ball can become that guy, or Ingram can become that guy, or Russell can become that guy. And now if Russell becomes that guy, he's going to be doing it for the Nets. And to me, that is the hardest part to swallow. Like, it's not, and I would be saying that if they traded the number two pick. I would be saying that if they traded Ingram. And in a way, I might even be saying it if it was Julius Randle. You know, I'm higher on Randle than others, but I think that he's already a very useful professional NBA player. And who knows, the fact that he's changing his body and that he's really going to be entering into his, what is his third professional season in terms of actual playing time on the court, that this is the time where players of his pedigree typically make a jump. If they're not, you know, LeBron or Shaq or Tim Duncan, who come in right away,
Darius, because so right now we have essentially no lead guards on the roster, at least what we would traditionally consider as lead guards. I would argue, in fact, that the best half-court playmaker the Lakers have right now is Julius Randle, who showed some chops there last season and was a capable playmaker when he had sufficiently spaced floor. And now he has Brook Lopez at the five. He has Lonzo Ball at the one or the two, however you consider him, and Josh Hart and other pieces that will hopefully all combine to shoot half decently. Do you think that with the options for lead guards and free agency being so very, very sparse, do you think that keeping Julius Randle in year one is actually a thing that is almost would be very helpful for Lonzo Ball, or even essential for smoothing that year one transition? Because he's a guy, he might be the only guy on the roster right now who can legitimately, in the half court,
create his own shot.
Yeah, beat his man, create his own shot, and help set up Ball. And I mean, going with your comments about him getting in better shape and this being a contract year, that might be the perfect kind of fusion of things in which they can help each other out. And, I mean, they might play Randle off the team as it makes him more attractive to other options, but at the very least in the short term, it might be something that helps Lonzo out in year one and helps Randle get to his next contract.
No, I totally agree with that. I also think, too, that Pete did a great video about how Lonzo Ball would run the Lakers offense. I don't know if you guys have watched it, you guys in the room, or the people who are listening. Like, if you haven't watched it, you should watch it. It's a great video. One of the initial things that stood out to me is that when Pete was showing sort of the sets that the Lakers run and how those mirror some of the sets that UCLA ran, guess who was the guy who actually was doing the things that Lonzo Ball was doing as an offensive initiator? It was Julius freaking Randle. So he was making those passes off of pin downs when guards were coming off of screens. You know, he is a guy who in the half court can be very helpful. And one of the reasons why when the Lakers still had D'Angelo Russell, that I was saying in the long term, if Randle's not going to stay, I can understand it, is because the Lakers had a lot of guys who like to operate with the ball in their hands. And now they've just removed one of those guys. To now say that you're going to now remove Julius Randle as well, who do you have now that can actually make plays with the ball in their hands? It's what, Jordan Clarkson? It's, you know, you can isolate Brook Lopez, I guess, but that's basically it, because that's not really Lonzo's game at this point. And so what are you going to do? You know, at the NBA level, when you have a 24-second shot clock and you can't just, you know, run the ball down people's throats every single time unless you're the Warriors, then you're going, or the Houston Rockets, right, where you're just manufacturing pace because you've got shooters and all of this other stuff, there are going to be times where you're just going to have to create baskets in the half court based off of the simple thing that I've got the ball, there's a guy in front of me, I've got to beat that guy. And just like you guys were saying, Julius Randle right now is one of the guys that can do that's on the roster. And you remove him, and I think that you start to tilt the balance more in the direction of, okay, how are these guys going to score effectively? You know, if, like, remove Randle for whatever reason, if, you know, hopefully it's because you're getting Paul George or something like that. But when, imagine a lineup when Randle and Clarkson aren't in the game. How are you creating shots?
Yeah, prayer. All right, we're actually going to, that's a perfect send-off, actually, because we're going to get into some of the technicalities, some of the details and minutia of tonight's draft, and we have the perfect people to do that with. That's going to be on the second half of this crossover podcast. That's on the Laker Film Room portion of this podcast. This was the Locked On Lakers portion. I'm Anthony Irwin. Thank you very much for tuning in to Pete Zayas, Harrison Fagan, Ben Rosales, and Darius Fagan. Darius Soriano. It's
you
been a long
new dad, Harrison. New dad.
Well, that ended Darius's appearances on our show. Thank you very much for everybody tuning in. You can find our show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Let's get to part number two for a really exciting conversation about the technicalities and the minutiae of how all this is going to come together.